Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendosky.
And you're listening to Start Writing.
And today we are going to be discussing Save the Cat and Pet the Dog. We'll talk about the difference between the two, where to put them, and some of the nuances you can do to really get what you want out of this. And this actually came out of an online discussion with my writing group. And then even when we met up in person, there was still some confusion here. So I came up with a lot of examples, and then I did some even research after to really compile it and really clarify that as to why we do it and to really how to optimize it within your own writing.
Man, and just a little testimonial. I was not big on these terms before I met you. And I just feel like these are really cool concepts that can boost your story, particularly your protagonist, right from the beginning. And yeah, it can be really transformative.
Yeah. So this week in critiques, we're going to talk about vague versus concrete. What's going on here? So I came across this line. Children fought against their parents, smothering love, too weak to make any significant impact. Their bodies slumped in their parents' hold. Better to pass with love than to suffer the torment of demonic forces that were bound to take them. And so the problem with this paragraph as description is it's hard to actually visualize what's going on. We talk about this huge group. We have a lot of mood wording, but at no point do we get to anything specific. And so my thought was we need to add something. So we focus in on a single little boy trying to play with a ball in all of this chaos and destruction. And he is unaware, right? He's just trying to play because he's bored and he's got a ball, right? And his mother is clinging to him as he tries to fight and get away so that he can entertain himself with a game. But she is worried about all the danger. And he's just annoyed. He's like, just let me go, Mom. I just want to play with the ball, you know? Mm. And so you have that clash there. But in the bigger vagueness, you don't get that. Whereas if we get details of the city, the destruction, and then we see this boy fighting his mom, annoyed with her, and she is terrified and clinging to him. I feel like that gives us a much more concrete image. And we understand more. Like, it's even a psychological concept specifically, is that our minds gravitate towards single, individual, isolated things as opposed to large mobs. Like, we have the great quote from Mother Teresa's, "If I see the mass, I will do nothing. But if I see the one, I will act." Right? You know, even, you know, there's this big debate, whereas a news article saying, you know, 1,000 people were injured in a flood provokes no action. Whereas, you know, the story about but if it's a single individual impacted by it, it does move you. Just like those commercials late at night, you know, they don't show you, they do show you hordes of starving children, but then they focus on one little kid struggling, starving, because that's how our brains work. So we'll probably do a whole episode on this, dig into it, get all the studies and everything. But it was just a line I'd read this week and I wanted to kind of, you know, focus on that. And in your own writing, look at if you have some of these bigger, vague paragraphs that are describing big scenes or masses and giving you a good mood, that's fine. That's great. But then add in the detail, right? That final little touch, right?
On almost every single piece of writing that I have ever critiqued, this has been a critique, which is, you're too abstract. Give me a specific detail that I can latch on to,
right,
rather than this general idea of what's going.
Right.
Yeah. This is huge.
So that's this week in critique. So we were, for this week in Writing True, we were actually going to do an update on Jay's blurb progress. But as we've done research and different things like that, we actually decided we're going to do another episode on blurbs. We'll do Blurb Theory Part 2. And we'll dig into that there along with a lot of other stuff that we've continued to learn. So we're going to pass over that now and address it later.
But thanks for the feedback, by the way, from you who wrote in about that.
Yeah, because we actually got – I got more email about blurb theory than anything we've ever done. So it was a popular episode. Okay, so our discussion. What is Save the Cat and Pet the Dog? So if you listen to Elements of Plot, which was like our third episode ever, we covered these two very briefly. But here we're going to dig into them very deeply. So Save the Cat is a moment created to get the reader to like your protagonist, your main character, or any character. A more common way of thinking about this, this is the first impression, right? And it will color or taint every decision that person makes after that. Like, essentially, you're trying to give the reader a crush on your character, right? Like, I had a roommate, and he would get a crush on a girl, and he'd come home and tell me all the wonderful traits and quality she had. She would reject him, like, a week later, and he would be upset. And suddenly, she wasn't so wonderful.
That's so great.
Right? But we all do this, right? When we like somebody, we tend to see everything in the positive light and everything. And so what happens is we give a very positive first impression by saving the cat. And then your character is going to make a lot of choices. Some of them are going to be neutral. Some of them are going to be bad. But if they're colored in this positive light, the neutral become more positive rather than just neutral, and the negative we tend to understand as opposed to think they're a bad person, right? So there's a few key traits that audiences tend to find very likable. We like people who are intelligent. We like people who are talented, who are hardworking, kind, friendly, somebody who's put upon, mistreated, they experience injustices, and then, of course, the underdog. These are the really big likable traits. And we will dig into specific examples here. So in Indiana Jones, we see him weighing the sand against the statue, right? We've seen him go through a bunch of traps, but then in this moment we see, well, that's really smart. That's a really good idea, switch it out, you know, because I think a lot of people hadn't thought of that. And so the trait we're getting is he's intelligent. He's smart. So we like him, right? Harry Potter is mistreated by the Dursleys. He experiences a lot of injustices, not because of anything he's done, but because of who his dad and mom were, right? The Dursleys hate magic. And so they punish Harry because he's descended from wizards. And so that's the immediate gravitation to why we like him. So Coco, the movie that just came out,
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen either, but somebody was discussing this with me. Oh. But in the opening scene, he kisses his grandmother, and the guy who said it, he says, immediately, I liked him. I was like, any kid who kisses his grandmother is a good kid. And that was their save the cat moment, right? Getting us to like him. It's that first impression, and it gets us to like the character so that everything that happens after, we see it in a positive light, right? Mm. Give them a crush. Don't break it. So some basics of human psychology on here, like the science behind the sexiest man alive. So this was a study that was done, and they would have an image of an average looking person on screen, and they'd have a group of 20 people then decide if they thought this person was attractive or unattractive. And so they would then have a confederate within these 20 people. And their job was to say, yeah, I think he's kind of attractive. Or, yeah, I think he's kind of ugly. And what would happen is that would then be the tilt of the audience.
Really?
Yeah. They would become more and more extreme either way based on that first comment. But the face was computer generated to be neutral. And it would be the same face, right? And all they would have to do is tilt it one way or the other. Again, this is just a science of first impressions and the science of save the cat. Right?
It's almost like we gain a bias in that first moment, and then after that, we're looking for reasons to justify that bias.
Exactly. Exactly. You're trying to give them a positive bias on your character so that they will justify that bias with every choice and action the character makes.
And they're going
to
be actively seeking, oh, what's another way that this Coco kid is a good
kid,
likable boy.
So, okay, so we talked about that. So let's talk about some of the nuances of Save the Cat. So it's important to have this moment, right, to create that bias, to color the view of the reader. So let's talk about some of the balancing issues that we're going to deal with here. So in Man of Steel, there's a scene where Clark is a waiter at a restaurant, and a patron is giving one of the waitresses a hard time. And Clark intervenes, not with superpowers, but just as a man. Right?
At that point, I don't remember. We know that.
Yeah, you know
who the character is at that point.
Yeah.
So that's like the opening scene, right?
So the opening scene, well, if you skip all the Krypton stuff with his dad and Zod, then the opening scene with him, I think, is him saving people on the tanker.
Oh, yeah. So we've seen his face. We know he's Superman.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
So, and so the patron dumps a drink on Clark and he tolerates it. Right?
Man, I would just explode.
So, and it's not just about creating a positive view. It's about a specific direction. Clark will not use his powers to impose his will on humans. That's what we see there. And it's an important distinction in understanding his character.
So we're seeing humility, we're seeing temperance, but they're specifically linked. So we like, those are both Save the Cat attributes, but those are particularly pertinent to Clark because he's Superman.
Yes. Okay. Because he could, but he deliberately doesn't. You know, we see this. Clark will not use it to force his will on the human people. And so it's not just a Save the Cat moment. It's a specific moment designed for that character and that story. Mm.
This reminds me of the setting stuff we talked about where make the setting linked to the character.
Yeah, yeah.
This seems like that same kind of... So, it's like these need to be touching each
other. Well, if you look at Coco, his is not as definedly crafted. He just kisses his grandmother, which is a great moment.
So I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, I guess I haven't seen the movie, so I can't make that argument.
It's about... He goes to the land of the dead.
Yeah.
And it has to do with ancestry. Yeah. So his grandmother's two generations back.
I guess so.
So I think it's linked to the theme.
Maybe.
I'm speculating.
Yeah. I haven't seen it over yet. That's the problem. Okay. But I'm sure there's a lot of Save the Cat moments that just make you like the character.
We should have a segment where we critique films we've never seen. We should do this on everyone.
So we saw the trailer. All right. So Harry Potter. Harry Potter is about to get opportunities that would make most people jealous. He's going to become a wizard. He becomes immediately rich. He attends Hogwarts. To offset this potential jealousy, the Save the Cat moment is a massive amount of injustice that he's exposed to in the Dursley home. So when he gets all these good things, it doesn't make us jealous. We think he deserves it. He's been so mistreated. And
we don't just think he's a spoiled jerk.
Yeah.
Entitled. None of that ever comes up.
Yeah. And so it balances those two, right? That specific Save the Cat injustice is balanced by the massive amount of opportunities given him. Hmm. Right. And so it offsets that potential jealousy of the audience. Instead, we can celebrate him receiving these good things. Okay, so Indiana Jones. So we see his intelligence expressed by dealing with all the deadly traps as he goes through hunting the idol. And we know he's brave because we've seen him, you know, like there's the moment with the spiders where it's like it's just a spider. He kicks it off. And that's important because Indiana's pet the dog moment is that he's afraid of snakes, right? And so, again, we're balancing the two against each other.
Yeah, so man, all of these are kind of foreshadowing important things that are coming.
Yeah. So, and then in Smallville, again, this is a Superman story for those who aren't familiar. It's about Superman when he's a teenager in high school and different things like that. So Clark asks his dad to sign a permission slip to play football. Clark doesn't really want to play football. He wants to be normal, and he wants to fit in. And he sees playing sports as a way to do that. But his dad refuses because he's worried that Clark will hurt the other kids. And so Clark experiences this injustice, right? That he cannot do this thing that all the kids get to do, and it's nothing to do with any of his own choices. He was born this way. It's not his fault. But yet he's been being denied these everyday experiences because of it. Mm. And so in that moment, he experiences an injustice that way. And it is because of his special ability. So instead of being envious of him, the very first encounter we have is not him being awesome and super. The very first encounter we have with Clark Kent is you cannot fit in and be normal and be popular because you have these gifts. Right, he is immediately denied something we all want because of them. And so instead of being jealous, again, we start off with the negative of these superpowers. And so it balances against the fact that he, you know.
Man, that's just such a cool statement that they're saying, it's hard to be a superhero.
It's hard.
Which is like the opposite. You normally think it would be awesome to be.
Yeah.
And it's cool to flip that around.
And so, they flip it around in the very first scene that we meet him. And so they almost do like a double with Clark Kent, because there's another moment where Clark is in love with Lana Lang.
And did you rewatch these?
I rewatched the first episode to do this. Cool. Yeah,
I used to watch these in high school.
Yeah,
it's been forever.
But she has a boyfriend, and so again, the one thing he wants, his superpowers cannot help him get, right? And so we can connect to him completely in this moment. So I guess this is actually his pet the dog moment. So we'll go back into it. I hadn't thought about that.
Oh,
okay, yeah. So this is his pet the dog moment. So okay. So the takeaway is that saving the cat is important to create that bias, but it can be made stronger if it balances against another element in the story, right?
This links specifically to the character, to his strengths, but also to his weaknesses.
Yeah.
And the trials that yeah. he's facing.
So pet the dog is a humbling moment, where they become a little bit vulnerable and a little bit more relatable, and we bring them down. So like I said, Clark pines for Lana Lang, and it's something his superpowers can do nothing about. And so he's got this very human experience. She has a boyfriend. And even though he can, I guess at this moment, he can't fly or shoot lasers from his eyes, but he's got super strength and super speed. But he's got all these things, and none of that will help him get Lana Lang, the one thing he really wants. Hmm. Right. And it's a very human experience that most of us can relate to, having someone we want and can't have. Right. And, so
save the cat. we want the reader to think the character is awesome.
Yes.
And then save the dog. We want them to think the character is like me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Save the cat. The character is awesome. Pet the dog. They are like me. Right. Because you like them even more in that moment because right. they are like me. Mm. So Indiana Jones, he's afraid of snakes like most people are. Like I remember distinctly seeing the moment where Indiana Jones looks into the Well of Souls and says, "Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?"
So much.
And in that moment, because like there's even this part where he yells it in the plane because there's a snake in there. He's like, "I hate snakes."
Yeah.
It didn't really catch my attention there, but looking in the Well of Souls, he says, "Snakes." That's when the moment I was like, "He's afraid of snakes. I'm afraid of snakes. I'm like Indiana Jones." Like I was this great, you know, I was just a little kid. And Indiana Jones was just amazing. And then suddenly I was like, he's so like me. We're like each other. This is amazing. Right? That was the moment for me. But I want to point out what happens if we switch these two. If Indiana Jones being afraid of snakes comes before Save the Cat, he's a coward is what you see. And that becomes the bias you take through the whole movie.
Wow.
So it's important that Save the Cat come first.
You need to like him first.
Yeah, you need to like them. So usually Pet the Dog is saved for Act 2. After your inciting incident, you're a little bit into the story. Hmm. And so you've had that first likable moment where you save the cat, and then you've had a bunch of other things happen. But because you have that bias, it builds your liking of the character more. And then you pet the dog to bring him down.
So I feel like I don't have a single moment or a single scene when I write that does either of these. Well, I think you can identify the first time that it happens in one of my stories, but I feel like it happens a lot and in different ways.
Hmm.
Is that, I mean, I've been critiqued for being too wordy. Maybe I need to cut some of these out, but I feel like you can start with a moment that makes them seem awesome. And then later it's like, yeah, but he's also awesome in this way. And he's also awesome in this way. Or, you know, she's like me in this way, in a small way in the beginning, and you start liking her and then you slowly build. I don't know. Do you have thoughts on that? Like,
I guess I'd have to see it. Like, if you could find a film that does it, I think we could do a better critique of it because you could see it in a very short time and we could, you know, really look at it and say, okay, is it working? Is it not? Does it feel like we're beating a dead horse?
I guess, like, I would say in my books have a single hook, right? The opening scene, there's something exciting. It just happens. Like, there's only one hook, but there are many exciting things throughout.
Mm.
But there's really only one hook. So maybe with these, there's one pet the dog moment that kind of kicks it off. And serves that initial role, but it kind of keeps, I don't know. I'm just kind of,
yeah,
in my mind, this doesn't quite seem as singular,
right,
as some of these other concepts. But
so, and I will point out that these are screenwriting concepts. They were started in screenwriting and then they've kind of been adapted into storytelling altogether. And in screenwriting, your time is very valuable.
Yeah.
These incidents have to be singular. You don't have screen time for anything else.
Okay. No, that makes sense. No, because I love the concept. It's brilliant. I think if you can identify that this is missing in a story, that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
It really can add a lot of strength.
But I mean, in a series, you're going to have multiple of these. If you read Harry Potter, you start at the Dursleys every time. I'm like, why are we starting with the Dursleys? Let's skip this part. But it's for anyone who either hasn't, you know, picked one up in a long time or who decided to start in that one. You got to save the cat. And the saving the cat, Harry experiences injustice at the Dursleys' hands every time.
Man, do you think people really skip the first Harry Potter?
So, I don't know.
I know it happens with books. I've just never imagined it with Harry Potter.
Well, I mean, like, maybe that's how somebody started. They saw the book at a friend's like, I've heard of Harry Potter. And they pick it up and it happens to be the third one. And they don't know enough and they're not invested enough to, you know, to make sure it's the first in the series. And they just start reading it.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and then all the components are there. They're not dependent on you to have read the first two in the series. Mm-hmm. Right? Because in those first two chapters, she gives you all the backstory. You don't have to have read the early Harry Potters to follow.
It's a good reminder, too. Carrying on. Sorry.
Okay, so then let's go to pet the dog for Harry. So Harry, despite being the boy who lived, struggles in school or with magic, right? You know, despite, you know, he has this huge reputation, he still has a hard time with learning spells and everything, and he gets into trouble with his teachers, and he has a hard time with the rules, like most kids do at some point in their lives, right? It's a very relatable moment. Now, again, let's switch these two moments. If we do Harry Potter with all these issues, then he's a trouble kid. He's a little bit of a troublemaker. If you don't like him first, then Harry's a troublemaker and he's, you know, he needs to get his act together. But if Harry's experienced all these injustices first, we like him. We think he's just a little rebellious, but he's a good kid, right? It shifts that perspective completely. So it's important that you keep them in the right order.
Yeah, I like that.
So always save the cat before you pet the dog, and pet the dog is important, but it has to come out to save the cat. And remember, it's not just about saving the cat, you got to save the right cat, right? Get that nuance in there that balances with the other parts of the story to really make it effective.
Okay, guys, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a review on iTunes or your podcasting venue of choice. That helps us a lot. And tell your friends about it. We'd invite you to check out one of our books. And if you have any suggestions or comments, we love hearing from you. So shoot us an email at jbendosky@gmail.com. And we will be sure to respond either through email or in the actual podcast. And lastly, we'd love you to sign up for our newsletter, which is at joseph-bendosky.com. Thanks for listening. It's time to start writing.